Howdy, friends, and welcome in to the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the TCU Horned Frogs on SI. I am your host, Just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth. I'm a Fort Worth area native with very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andrus, who co-hosts just about every show that we have on our site. This is episode 11 of our show covering TCU football and a smattering of other topics related. And today, we're joined by another member of our staff, Zion Trammell. I keep wanting to say Trammell, but it's Trammell, just for anyone wondering. It is Tuesday, the 17th of September at time of this recording. And JD, Zion, I have to ask, what is your favorite kickoff time for a home game? JD mentioned to me in the press box on Saturday that he loved the night slot at Amon Carter. And I agreed with him. It was a beautiful look, the lights on and everything. But I thought about it, and also I would think like the 11 o'clock kick might be a decent time. I mean, it's a, you know, Fort Worth is a beautiful city in the daytime, especially when the weather's clear. So I just want to know, I want to pick y'all's brains. What's your favorite kickoff time at a home game?
That is a really good question to ask. For me, definitely not going to say like 2 o'clock or anything in the middle of the day, especially in the early months of September and October when it's really hot. I personally like the night games. I just think there's a really cool vibe at Amon G. Carter Stadium when you have the night game. And as the sun starts to set, you get some really good football. Personally, that's my favorite. And I would say close second is the 11 a.m., but that's more in the late in November when I'd prefer it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I went to college in the South. I grew up in the South. I don't care what time of the year it is. Any game that's not played when the sun is down is going to be miserably hot. And I just don't enjoy any of that. And then if it's a 2 o'clock game, I don't care about the morning games because I'm already out tailgating, drinking for the game at 2 o'clock. And then most of the time, I don't care what about the games afterwards because either my team lost and I'm going to continue drinking in a sad way or my team won and I'm drinking in a happy way. But if you put it at a night game, it does get a little dangerous because now you're drinking all day. So you got to balance it out a little bit. But I do think the night game is probably the best slot you can have.
For our listeners, please game day drink responsibly as opposed to what JD just said. Those are solid answers. I actually do love, I will say, so there's one example in particular I can think of. I love night games, love the primetime slot. Most everybody knows I'm a diehard OU fan, and I've been to Norman in every time slot. I've been to the primetime slot, the 2:30 slot, and the 11 o'clock slot. I've been to games in Norman in all three slots. I love 11 a.m. kickoffs, and the one example I can say that I have, it was late October, like 4 years ago at Kyle Field and down in College Station. And granted, Kyle Field in College Station is what it is. But I mean, just a beautiful time of day. It was cool. The wind was blowing. And, you know, we're in a bowl that seats over 104,000 people. And amazingly, there was wind blowing in the bowl. I like the 11 a.m. kickoffs. I mean, that's just my opinion. I think that is my favorite. I love waking up and knowing you're starting your day with football. Like, there's something special about that to me just because I love football so much. That's about all the positivity we're going to get out of me in this show. Because a game happened on Saturday, and we were feeling very good for about an hour and a half. And after that hour and a half, we kind of all looked at each other in the press box and said, okay, we need to do something, because it's starting to trend in a way that we're not liking. And it continued to trend in a way that we didn't like. Until ultimately, UCF pulled off the comeback upset against the TCU Horned Frogs, 35-34. Horned Frogs missed a field goal as time expired. An unbelievable comeback from the Knights. TCU led, I think it was just like a minute and a half into the second half that TCU scored to make it 28-7. So it was less than a full half of football that the Knights pulled off a 21-point comeback, more than 21-point comeback, to win this game. And we have some thoughts that came from the mouth of Sonny Dykes. And I will say it's a good thing that we have confirmed that none of the coaches watch or even want to watch this show. Because we have some thoughts, and we might pick them apart a little bit. Josh Hoover had a great game. The defense had a great first half. Jack Besh had a career at 9 receptions, 200 yards, and a touchdown. Eric McAllister had a good game, 4 receptions, 54 yards, and a touchdown. All that means nothing. They didn't win the game. And in this conference, especially with the way college football is now, especially in this conference, you can't lose this way. And that's exactly what they did. They came out in the second half. Sonny Dykes wants to deny it, but we all saw it. There was a change in how that team played in the second half. And I'm starting to get a little ahead of myself and get a little too emotional here. So I'm gonna end my statement and let y'all go ahead and talk. But, I mean, this stings. This is just absolutely terrible. And this is inexcusable, really. I mean, you come in so hyped up to your home conference opener, and you look great, and then you drop the ball. I've gotten my opening piece in. What do y'all have to say?
Go ahead, Zion.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a frustrating loss for TCU. You obviously had the lead for majority of this game, and a lot of these Big 12 games are going to come down to one score, and we saw that happen and 2 years ago where TCU was faced with a lot of one possession games and they came out on top. But this year, in their first, you know, real competitive matchup against UCF, they came up short at the end there. I think really, I mean, Josh Hoover is obviously not to blame. He had a terrific game, 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. Is really starting to settle in as a very mature and efficient quarterback for this team. But, man, the defensive line got absolutely shredded. I mean, I think everyone in the stadium knew exactly what UCF was trying to do and establish the run game, you know, with KJ Jefferson. He's a very physical quarterback. RJ Harvey, they have one of the best rushing attacks in college football, and they continue to run the football over and over and again, and TCU really had no answers. And that's kind of a long-term issue that could be a problem for TCU when they go up against a team like Oklahoma State and Utah and teams that, you know, aren't going to run around you. They're going to run right through you. So, yeah, it definitely pointed out a lot of red flags for TCU. I think certainly fans have a right to be disappointed. But UCF's a good team. I think they are definitely going to be turning a lot of heads this season, and you know, props to them for pulling off the comeback.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, man. On one end, I kind of look smart because I have UCF projected to be second in the Big 12, but I can't be too happy about it because obviously TCU did blow the lead. It's a tell of two teams. You have the first half team who is genuinely, and we're going to talk more about what Sonny Dykes said later, but Sonny himself said today that that was the best half that TCU has played in his time that he's been here. And I almost agree with that minus 2022 Kansas State in the second half. But it was right. The defense was clicking. Josh Hoover is still arguably in the spot to be the best quarterback in the conference, which is insane to be talked about with the quarterbacks that are in the league. But I mean, you're just the inability to adapt in the second half to what was going on the field is bewildering to me. We saw a lot less Josh Hoover in the second half, or not Josh Hoover, Johnny Hodges in the second half, which was the most shocking to me because when you're getting stuffed through the run, Johnny Hodges is known as a run-stopping linebacker. And he's not on the field. And I get it that Caleb Ealarm's oar is a lot faster and is able to contain better than Johnny Hodges. But there weren't runs that were designed to the outside. The runs, in the words of Carson Wurzel, were 60 and 61 zone repeatedly. And UCF basically looked at Avalos and the TCU defense and said, here's what I'm running. Stop it. And TCU said no. I mean, on the bright side, TCU held RJ Harvey to his least amount of rushing yards in the year. It was with 180, but
A win's a win.
Yeah,
a win's
you got win. After that, you got to take.
I'm glad you brought that up, by the way.
Wear. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, and I completely agree with you that it was a tale of two teams in both halves. This was the first game I really got to sit down and watch the entire game for TCU, and I have multiple takeaways from it. But you hit the nail on the head. And to me, TCU did what, in my opinion, is my biggest pet peeve for a defense in football. You have the lead. You know they need a big play and they need points, and you immediately start playing pass protection and you start playing prevent, and they took off Johnny Hodges. Well, think about this, okay? In the first half, UCF was trying to establish a passing game. We saw it. Matter of fact, it was what we said the defense was doing so great all game, was pressuring KJ Jefferson. And then when they did run, they were, you know, we called the blitz, we called the hard rush, and we stopped it. And that's why UCF only came out of the first half with 7 points. And had we continued that, they would have only come away with 14, and I'm convinced of that. Instead, we dropped back, and Sonny Dykes said in the post-game press conference, not the press conference today, that he didn't switch to a 3-3-5, but that's exactly what it looked like. And Carson was the one that brought that up, and I thought he was absolutely right. It was absolutely ridiculous, and you brought up R.J. Harvey, and I'm glad you did, because it was 180 yards on 29 carries. The last, I want to say, I have it right here in front of me. The last 104 yards of that came in the second half. They were shut down in that first half. And they totally switched up what they were doing. Offensively as well. And we saw that with, especially in the final drive. And JD, even you called it, right? We didn't see it the entire first half, but that final drive, you know, you said, we're going to get screen passes and you're going to like it, right? You were making a joke about it. And I was saying, right now is the time to put in Drake Dabney, have him run up the seam. He's going to be wide open because UCF was playing with two safeties that were cheating in. Drake Dabney would have been wide open up the seam. And instead, they try to keep it to the short passes and then the out route, which I really, you and I looked at each other with disappointment that they made that call because the slant would have been the right call. Sonny Dykes denied it in the post-game press conference, but there was something that changed with the coaches that changed the entire dynamic of that game. I firmly believe that.
On the contrary, Nolan, and I'm going to let Zion talk about it, but I want to bring it up before we forget about it, is Sonny Dykes said he saw nothing different in the second half compared to the first.
Yeah, I mean, it was evident that something different had changed for TCU because UCF doesn't just magically, figure it out. And I understand, I think he said, you know, how their emphasis was to run the ball and that takes time gradually over the course of the game, but not to that degree where TCU was just unable to stop them at all. And I think that there had to have been something that changed schematically. And I guess as the coaching staff, they may not just didn't want to admit it, I guess. I'm not entirely sure, but maybe they did keep it the same. I don't know. But I think to a lot of us, it felt like something had to have changed.
From my eyes, something changed. I mean, it's the question JD brought up. Why did we not see Johnny Hodges on that field for most of the second, if not the entire second half? Is he hurt and they are hiding something from us? Like, did they really change schemes? Like, something changed, whether Dykes wants to say it out loud or he doesn't. And I don't think he does, but something changed.
No, to play into your point, right? So, one, we knew Johnny Hodges wasn't hurt because you should have seen, I know we were all in there, but you should have seen the look on my face when Hodges walked into the press conference room to talk with us. So I was like, that means he's not hurt. So what is going on that he wasn't on the field? But to your point, Dykes said that nothing happened. Nothing changed between the first and second half. You said something changed between the TCU coaches. And I think that's exactly what it is. If you saw nothing different between UCF, then what's the only other thing variable that could have changed? It was TCU. But what changed? You're playing prevent defense and your offense is running the same thing. And look, I get it. I get it. If you can't run the ball, which, by the way, TCU can run the ball. You only need 10 yards for a first down and you're averaging 3.5 a carry. That's good enough for a first down. But if you can't run the ball and you don't feel comfortable enough to running the ball, why is the ball getting snapped with more than 10 seconds on the play clock?
Thank
if
you.
The clock is running.
Thank you.
It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put that on. I don't know if that's a Josh Hoover thing. I don't know if that's a Kendall Briles thing.
And I thought we leaned a little too much on the run in the second half. I thought we were trying to kill clock. And much to your point, if that is the case, why are we snapping it with more than 10 seconds on the play clock? But this was a team that really, and we were talking about it, we have problems with the run. And that was one thing that Sonny Dykes actually admitted in his post-game press conference. We have trouble with the run. We cannot run the ball. So why are we running on 3rd and 8? I understand we're trying to kill clock, but they are nipping at our heels and slowly working themselves back into this ball game, and the defense isn't doing anything to help. So why are we running from our own end of the field on 3rd and 8 when we know we can't run the ball?
Yeah, and then, go ahead,
Zion.
I was going to just say that, you know, another big reason that UCF was able to get back into this game was the fact that TCU struggled to sustain long drives, and the defense was right back out on the field pretty quickly. Even when they were, you know, scored a touchdown, it was within about a minute or so, which normally you wouldn't complain about, but it gave UCF plenty of time to be able to do whatever they wanted to do to get back into this game, whereas the Frogs weren't able to get those 5, 6, 7 minute drives, and it kept the defense back on the field pretty quickly and didn't really give them much time to be able to rest or figure out what's going on exactly.
No, yeah, it's literally the duality of Kendall Briles' offense, right? Like, if you look at the time of possession, UCF had 32 minutes, 54 seconds. TCU had 27:06. And this was a big problem that stemmed from last year. And we've seen the offense slow down some even, but
yeah.
When a lot of the offense seems to be boom or bust, where you're either driving the entire length of the field or you're going 3 and out, you got to kind of find a happy medium. And I just don't think that there is one. And I don't know how much a running game would even help with that. I know, Nolan, that I made a lot of jokes, and a lot of them were not really jokes because they ended up being true. But, like, the red zone special, like, hey, here's a run, here's a fade. We might try a screen. We might go for a crossing route. Who knows? Oh, it's 3rd down and 8. Here's a little wide receiver screen that you might like. Oh, it's, you know, 1st and 10, and they're not stacking the box at all, and you should hand the ball off. Nah, we're going to take a deep shot. Good luck. Like, it just seems like there's no rhyme or reason to really what's going on. And when it works, the offense is a thing of beauty. But when it doesn't work, it's unwatchable.
Yeah, it's very rare for a team to lose a game or to be winning for 95% of the game and still lose the time of possession battle by almost 6 minutes. I mean, that says a lot.
Have you guys seen the ESPN graph, by the way, of the win prediction percent?
It's bad. It's really bad.
It's worse than West Virginia's.
Yeah.
After they choked the pit.
We had a 98.7% chance to win with about 2 minutes, 45 seconds to go. It was ridiculous. 4 touchdowns were scored by TCU. And we joked about the red zone, 14 yards out, 18 yards out, 50 yards out, and 16 yards out. Obviously 3 of those 4 coming in the red zone, but we really kind of broke it down between us that were in the press box. It's not so much in the red zone as it is between the 5 and the 10. And that was evident in the fourth quarter when Lemmerman kicked that field goal to make it 34-28. And we had, what was it, 3rd and goal from within the 1? Was it 2nd and goal? It was something like that.
It was 3rd and goal at the 1.
Within the 1. I mean, we had half a foot to go for the end zone. And false start. Obviously, you can't make mistakes like that, but if we spent this entire podcast complaining about false start penalties, then this show wouldn't last very long. I am disappointed, though. I personally thought in that moment, I mean, you still have well over 8.5 minutes to go in the game, but UCF has come all the way back and made this a 1-score game. I would have gone for it. I would have gone for it on 4th down. I would not have kicked that field goal.
Yeah, no, Sonny said that. He said if he had it back, he would have. And
yeah.
I mean, I think if obviously the penalty killed all momentum, which first of all, the penalty was on Remington Strickland, which isn't even in the starting five. And I never really saw him come in for Carson Bruno, who he did come in for. So I did find that off because I wasn't sure if it was an injury or what. And I haven't seen anything, but it's 4th and 6. Like, you're telling me you don't feel confident enough to go for that with the weapons and how much the receiving room has been torching UCF all game?
Yeah, it was more of a it was a very safe choice to go for the field goal. And my only reasoning behind that maybe is they felt that they just needed to get some points on the board and make them score a touchdown. But the way that UCF had been driving the ball, that almost seemed like a certainty. Whether it was, you know, at the 25 or whether they started at their own, you know, at the 6-yard line, that they were probably going to drive down the field and score. So at least by going for it, you give yourself an opportunity to extend the lead. But it was, I mean, it all starts with the false start. That doesn't happen, and TCU goes up by 10.
Well, even to their credit, right? So TCU kicked the field goal, wanted to play it safe. Hey, you know what? We're still up by basically a touchdown. UCF has to score here. UCF had a over four minute drive and punted.
Mm-hmm.
Over 4 minute drive. TCU proceeded to get the ball back and punt after 3 plays in 1:23.
Yeah, the defense got the stop finally, and the offense didn't really follow that up with a great drive at all.
And let me clarify, all 3 plays were pass plays. All 3 plays were pass plays that were completed. A pass for no gain, a pass for 2 yards, and a pass for 6 yards.
Yeah, they weren't moving. They weren't throwing the ball down the field at all. I mean,
you know what makes it more wild is it is 3 completed passes. You have 4 plays. A play clock is 40 seconds long. You're telling me we're at least not killing almost 3 minutes there? We're only killing 1:23? That comes back to the play clock issue.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I mean, if you take off an extra minute and a half, that's less time that UCF would have had to score, and they scored with about 34 seconds left in the ball game. So that drive before UCF scored, I think, was another one that just killed TCU.
The final play I'm going to bring up before we move on to some comments that were made by Sonny Dykes today that had us scratching our heads a little bit. The third down play, Josh Hoover tried to throw the out route. I believe it was to J.P. Richardson, and he left it short. J.D., you were the one who said it, and you're absolutely right. The out route takes way too long to develop. The Horned Frogs were out of time. They were down to their last time out, which they ultimately didn't need because the clock stopped the incompletion anyway. But I'm with you, J.D. Why the out route? What are they thinking? You run the slant in that scenario. Pick yourself up 5 extra yards, which probably would have made the difference on that field goal. Maybe 10 if he can break one tackle and get a little bit extra yardage. He had enough time to do that and still get the timeout. Why the out route? What could I want to know? I want to ask Kendall Briles. I want to know what was going through Briles' mind that said to him, out route.
Before we even dive into that, I want to talk about this in Zion. I want to see if you picked up on this. TCU had 2 timeouts on the final drive. What happened to the 3rd timeout, you might ask? 3rd timeout happened on, I believe it was a 1st and 10. They had just moved the chains, and TCU decided to substitute, and Dominique Johnson comes running into the field from the arms of Kendall Briles, pushing him onto the field, into the huddle as it is breaking. TCU has no time, so they now have to call a timeout. That's where your third one went.
And JD, who's the one in the press box that said that's going to hurt?
Yeah, it ultimately came back and it bit him. Because 34 seconds with the TCU offense, like, to their credit, is a lot of time. They can move the ball that quick. And they did.
Yeah. They did. I mean, they did a really good job of getting the, Hoover did a great job of at least giving them a shot to win this game. Credit to the receivers as well. They had a big game, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah. But to go back to your original question, Nolan, I don't, I didn't understand the out route call. I didn't like it when it happened. And I'm pretty sure I even made a joke that we were going to see a screen pass there, and it was might as well have been close enough. I just, and like, don't get me wrong, I feel bad saying everything I say and it making it look like I'm trashing Bryles, because genuinely, when his offense is great, it is one of the best offenses in the country.
That's what we're supposed to do, man. Dude, say it. Say it. Let it go, man.
I just, no, because like, you got to give him credit where the credit is due, right? Like, that first half was phenomenal. Bryles called a fantastic game. The offensive line was outstanding. All the receivers were clicking. Josh Hoover was phenomenal. Josh Hoover was still great in the second half. O-line kind of struggled a little bit, but they still ultimately had a really good game. I guess my biggest takeaway from the offensive side is the disconnect with the play clock. I just don't understand how, if we're not going to commit to running the ball, we're not letting the time expire before we snap the ball.
John, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think moving forward, if TCU can take what they did in the first half and apply that moving forward and fix things with the running game, and hopefully that, you know, because TCU's done great in pass protection. I can't recall Josh Hoover being under too much pressure. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think he has. It's just the run blocking hasn't necessarily been there. And I know the offensive line knows that. It's a new group and it's something they need to fix. But if there's any positives that you can take away, the first half offensive performance was terrific. And I think TCU's got a great receiving core that they can continue to gel with, and Hoover's looked great.
Moving on now to a comment that was made that in our group chat, which, John, I don't know if you're on, but if not, we need to get you on. Sonny Dykes had his press conference today, along with several others. But Dykes was the one that said, what stuck out to all of us, and JD was the one who brought it to my attention anyway. Sonny Dykes came out in the press conference today. We all have thoughts about this, that he puts no blame on the play calling whatsoever. He thought it was a brilliantly called game by his coaches. I do not believe that at all. And to add insult to injury and make it worse, he said the problem was the execution. I can give him that to a certain extent, but he is clearly trying to avoid something here, that something absolutely changed. And it's what I was talking about earlier. And he just came out and backed it up today, that he said play calling wasn't the problem. JD, I know you have thoughts. I tend to not believe that at all. He's avoiding this, and I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, Zion, you were there. Is the context and everything just right? Like, based off everything that we've seen on social media and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did say that it wasn't that there wasn't really a play calling issue. It was just execution. And he referenced a couple RPO plays where there could have been a play or two that would have been a walk-in touchdown. I can't remember specifically what he was referring to. And he made a reference to the third and goal at the one, the false start, that, you know, led to TCU having to settle for a field goal. And I mean, yeah, that's pretty much what he meant. And I mean, I understand that to an extent. I think there were some plays that, you know, where TCU just came up short and didn't execute great, but you know, I can understand why some people may not believe that. I don't know for certain.
Yeah, it's one of those that are like, he's got a point, and he even started his press conference after the game with this, where like, when you win a game like that, everyone praises the players. When you lose a game like that, everyone blames the coaches. And I get where he's coming from with it, where, you know, maybe the play calling was right. And maybe after they've gone back and reviewed the tape and seen more of the in-depth analysis, that maybe the play calling really was great. And Maybe the execution was wrong, but like, I'm not going through that. I'm just going to tell you firsthand that I think the execution was great. I do think that there were a lot of times where I will say the play calling was a bigger issue on the offensive side and not the defensive side, because there were a lot of times that blitzes were called and guys on defense were just either hitting the right hole and RJ Harvey was just bouncing the ball outside, or were going through the wrong hole and RJ Harvey cuts it upfield. And that's kind of like one of those where sometimes you just get beat. Like, you know, you can't compete with that. You're not always going to be right. You can call the right play every single time, and sometimes you just get beat. It's how it is. It's football. It's what makes it fun. I feel like to say that is a cop-out answer, and it's just, I don't like that. It doesn't give me. Sonny preached all offseason, all in training camp, all after the season last year, where the team just wasn't mentally ready, and he blamed that on him and said that him and his staff needed to be better. But now it just feels like a backpedaling answer.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm really disappointed. I mean, I expected, and this goes into my next thought actually as well. I feel like there's a lack of urgency after a loss like this. The only one who showed it to me, and I didn't get to watch all the interviews and all the press conferences from today. I got to watch clips of some of them, but not all of them. The only one that really showed really any emotion that really should be shown after a loss like this was Johnny Hodges in the post-game press conference. I mean, he's a very well outspoken guy, and he's, you know, obviously he's one who naturally looks for the flaws and looks how to get better. But he went into that press conference like he was ready to flip that table he was sitting at, as opposed to Sonny Dykes, who came in and was just like, man, loss like this suck, and just answered every question. I feel like he did the same thing today, in contrast to Josh Hoover after the game, that came in with all smiles and positivity, which is great to have, but I mean, you got to have some sense of urgency. And I'm really, after seeing Dykes post game and seeing Dykes today, I feel like there's a lack of urgency after a loss like this, because this is the type of loss that can determine how the rest of your season is going to go, especially in a conference like this.
Yeah, I think kind of the idea, and with a lot of the players on this team, is that they don't want to panic yet, that they feel like there still is time to be able to turn this around. And they've got a big matchup with SMU, and that's where they want to look towards. But I think for me, I'm at a point where, if, you know, this game against UCF was a pretty big determining factor of how I felt with the rest of the season moving forward. You win this game and think, okay, man, this team is pretty legit. They've got a good shot. Now that kind of hangs in the balance a little bit. I'm not really sure where this team goes from here. You know, it's not going to be easy to beating SMU. Then you've got Kansas and Utah, and so you got some tough Big 12 opponents. And I think that I understand where the lack of panic is. There really isn't, I don't think, a lot of panic right now. I think what they need to do is to continue to stick to what they've been doing and believing in each other, and hoping that a bounce back could happen with SMU.
Man, you're going to do it again, Nolan. I am the optimist, and I truly have never felt better about this season, including now, because you know what? They lost. They sucked. I was high on UCF, so maybe I'm a little bit more biased that way. But you're telling me that that first half team is in there somewhere and can, you know, if this could be the catalyst that makes them play like that all season? Yeah, I'm happy with that. At no point during last year's run did I look at this team and go, man, they got something going. This year they do. Even the second half team that we saw against UCF would beat last year's team probably 10 out of 10 times. And I just think that you gotta take it for what it is. And it's that the Big 12 is kind of vulnerable this year. And I kind of still like the odds to be able to run the table. Like, this team comes out hungrier than ever, and is able to bounce back, beat SMU this weekend, beat a Kansas team that isn't playing at its best, beat a Utah team that is still trying to figure out an identity. Like, the opportunity is there. Like, yeah, you play an Arizona team. Right, yeah, you play an Arizona team that's not good. And, you know, like, I think as the season has gone on, you've looked at your schedule and been like, yeah, there's a lot of teams on here that aren't as good as people thought. Arizona State's a little bit better. Arizona, it can't stop anything besides themselves. Kansas, some people really liked Kansas, and I didn't buy into the hype. So, you know, point one for me there. But
yeah, there was a lot wrong. There's a lot I said wrong, and we're going to get into one of them here in a minute.
Yeah, I am still so confident in this team and the abilities because the skill is there. The hunger is there. Maybe I'm wrong and it's not there in the coaching staff. But I think it's there in Andy Avalos. Maybe it's not there in Kittle Briles. And I think Sonny isn't the coach that is meant to be fired up. Like, that's never been Sonny. Sonny has always been the calm, cool, collected, hey, he's been there, done that. His dad's a legendary coach. Like, he knows how to handle these situations. So for him to not be upset or stressed doesn't really faze me because, if anything, it gives me more confidence because I'm like, hey, he knows what to say. He knows how to rally these guys.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay to just have that from a coach. And I think this team's level of maturity is a lot better than last year's team. And I'm just noticing that from the press conferences and how they, you know, handle each question and kind of how connected they are as a team. I think their chemistry is a lot better. And Josh Huber's an incredible leader, honestly. I've been really impressed with the way he handles himself after the game and how he plays on the field. He's a, you know, natural born leader. And I'm with you there, JD. I'm still confident in this team. This loss stings. It's not, you know, it's tough to do that in front of the home crowd. And, you know, it might bury some of the hype a little bit. But man, I think it's a tough schedule, but if they can work out a few of those kinks, this team can be really good. And hopefully at the end of the season, we're still talking about a eight or nine win team. Who knows? We'll see, but.
Yeah. No loss can hurt as bad as 2022 anymore anyway. So, like, you know, yeah. we're
getting a little more numb.
Yeah. It's all stepping stones.
Yeah.
All right, a couple quick hits before we move on to picking JD's brain and our Big 12 selections of the week. First, before we talk about some of the games, we're not going to talk about all of them, but I do want to just see what y'all think about this. The Pac-12, or I guess as I like to call them, the Tupac, came out and said apparently they are chasing after four Mountain West schools right now, which I include, I believe, Colorado State, Boise State, Fresno State. And I'm forgetting the other one, but they have come out and they said, go ahead.
It was San Diego State.
San Diego State. Thank you. So what do y'all take? What's y'all's take on this? Cause it looks like instead of the death of the Pac-12, we could be looking at the death of the Mountain West.
I love it. Look, we're so back. The Pac-12 is back. I don't care who they get. I'm just glad that we're, you know, that there's talks about the Pac-12. Reviving. Look, I think, you know, I have friends that go to San Diego State. I've been there a few times. They've got a really good basketball program, so that's obviously something that they can bring to the conference. But I think it's pretty exciting. To me, the Mountain West, it's there. You know, I don't really have much energy or excitement around the Mountain West, so I think I'm okay with it kind of possibly disbanding a little bit. But, you know, how about the Pac-12 just saying out of nowhere, we're back. We're back. We're not dying just yet. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting move.
I cannot wait to hear what JD has to say. His facial expression this whole time has been gold.
Zion, I'm glad you love the Pac-12, but it's never coming back. It's a glorified Group of Five program. And it's a domino that's going to cause a catalyst of other programs to leave their Group of Five for better pasture. Yeah, the Mountain West is there, but like it's still one of the better Group of Five programs. You're going to get teams from like your Sun Belt, from your Big Sky, that will get an invitation to the Mountain West. And it's a domino of one conference is going to end up being completely dead. And it's not going to be the Pac-12 because what's dead may never die. But like, Props to the Pac-12 for, or Pac-2, or Tupac, whatever you want to call it.
Tupac, yeah.
Props to them for releasing a conference power rankings every week. I look forward to it now on Sundays when I'm at work. I'm like, where's the Pac-2 power rankings? I love it. It makes my day. But genuinely, like, good for the Pac-12. Like, I do, if they really, really lean into the Pac-12 after dark and give me, like, 1 a.m. college football, I'm all for it. And I think that's legitimately a chance to have a media market there. Like, the amount of people that would watch that is available. Like, it's not unobtainable. And I think it's something that if you just say, hey, you know what? The Pac-12 originally fell. Thanks, Larry Scott. You just lean into whatever you can do to get more viewers. No matter how wacky or weird it is, college football is about money and revenue. That's what you got to do. And I think I think they can genuinely not be revived to what they were, but be a really, really good secondary non-Power Four conference.
I am all in, by the way, for the 11 p.m. kickoff biweekly in Hawaii for whoever they're playing, if the Pac-12 can get Hawaii. A couple other games to note. Oklahoma State did not fall into the trap that Mike Gundy said that they would. They end up dominating Tulsa 45-10. Cincinnati beat Miami, Ohio 27-16 in a game that was probably a lot closer than it should have been. And this one, was Texas Tech just so desperate for a style points win that they just looked at North Texas and said, you know what, we're going to beat the crap out of you and you're going to like it?
I guess
I'm not talking
so.
About Tech because I got 90 seconds to talk about Tech.
All right. All right. Well, but now we know what JD's going to talk about. Pitt squeaks by West Virginia 38-34. Tough loss to the Mountaineers there. Utah, slow start against Utah State. In-state rivalry there. The Utes end up beating the Aggies 38-21. Baylor, good win over Air Force after a very slow start in that one, 31-3. I was wrong. I wrote a very big check for the Colorado State Rams last week, and they did not come through. Braden Fowler Nicolosi, I love you, bud, but you should have kept your mouth shut for one, and you should have just followed up on the field. Colorado wins that one 28-9. I still do think it was a really unclassy move for Shedeur Sanders to not shake his hand after the game. I thought him approaching, you know, hey, you beat me, whatever, you know, like I'm, you know, I'm humble. I'm owning it. You beat me. And Shedeur just turned him away. I didn't like that. Houston 33-7 over Rice. They get revenge from their, I believe it was double overtime loss last year. BYU in the late night game Saturday beat Wyoming 34-14. UNLV takes down Kansas in probably a campaign to try to get themselves added to the Pac-12. Kansas State beat Arizona in a non-conference game 31-7. And Arizona State needed an extra push in the second half, but squeaked by Texas State, who, by the way, I am very high on this season. Go Bobcats. I don't know if y'all, JD, I know you have thoughts that you're going to have 90 seconds to speak about here in a minute. Zion, anything in those Big 12 results from this past week you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was pretty surprised to see Kansas State handle Arizona. It might just speak to how Arizona might have been picked a little too high in the Big 12, and Kansas State looked really good in that game. Honestly, I mean, nothing crazy to me that really threw me off. I think that North Texas, I mean, that was pretty funny. People were saying on Twitter, hey, Chandler Morris, bring us to the promised land, get us this dub over Texas Tech, and he goes out and throws three interceptions. And it sparks the greatest mystery in TCU football history is how he ended up starting over Max Duggan and Josh Hoover. But, you know, good for Texas Tech, I guess. But, yeah, nothing. I mean, I wouldn't say there was anything that really caught me off guard. I was more focused on the SEC this weekend. I didn't get a lot of eyes on Big 12 this weekend. But, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts.
JD, anything you want to add outside the 90 seconds you're about to have?
Oh, no. I'm going to cover it all. Don't you worry.
All right. Well, I've got a quick trivia question for y'all because it was just brought up. Do y'all know 2020? I want y'all looking in the camera so I know you're not looking at your computer, so I know you're not looking it up. Who scored the first touchdown in the 2020 Big 12 championship game?
The 2020?
2020 Big 12 championship game. Who scored the first touchdown?
Oh, my goodness. I'm like completely blanking on the 2020 Big 12 championship.
Is it Alan Bowman?
It is not. Zion, care to wager a guess?
Oh man, I don't even.
The game was between the Oklahoma Sooners and the Iowa State Cyclones, and the first touchdown of that game was a designed quarterback run from 6 yards out by none other than Chandler Morris for the Oklahoma Sooners.
Wow. What? I
literally forgot he played for Oklahoma.
I did too. I mean, I probably should have guessed that based, but I completely forgot he played for Oklahoma.
By the way, we won the game. So.
Well, yeah, because anyway. You're lucky you didn't play Houston.
Shut up. All right, JD, I've got 90 seconds getting ready on my timer here. When you hear the TCU fight song, you know your time is up. Let me make sure my volume's up. Starting right now, 90 seconds, let's pick JD's brain. JD, what's on your mind?
So I'm going to start simple, right? I'm not a man with an ego or anything, but I love being right. And there's been a lot I've been right about. One, Arizona, buddy, you're not that good. Number two, Kansas. Yeah, Jalen Daniels isn't that guy. I've been saying for the past 3 years he's not that guy. And it feels right to be good to be right about something. Other thing I haven't been right about, and I am going to get in front of it, is Donovan Smith is not very good and hasn't been good at all for Houston at all this year with 142 passing yards. That's awful. RJ Harvey had 40 more rushing yards than him, by the way. The last thing I want to talk about is if anyone ever tries to get you into sport betting, don't do it. Just save your sanity. Just be better. Because sometimes you'll get a really, really interesting line where, like, you'll see an ex-TCU quarterback's playing a reeling Big 12 team that really can't stop anything and has no offensive production. And the line looks so good and juicy. And then all of a sudden, you're watching and three touchdowns have been scored against them in a minute and 20 seconds. And you're just left reeling and wondering what went wrong in your parlay. And then, you're kind of just left with a sour taste in your mouth. And then maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe that night your favorite team blows a 3-touchdown lead and then now you're left with an even worse feeling. And now it's midnight and you're kind of wondering why you even like college football in the first place and haven't picked up a sport like cricket, because that's what I'm thinking about doing right now. Anyways, Chandler Morris, love you. Great guy. Always cheer for you. And you look great, but you let me down.
My alarm was not as loud as I would have liked it to have been there, but you finished up right as the TCU fight song started playing on my phone. I kind of figured a little rant about Chandler Morris was coming, and I feel so bad because I know his family and like I know them personally.
No,
but,
love him. I really truly wish him nothing but success. And it's crazy because we talked about it in the press box that there were so many passes in that game where you were like, dude. You show someone Chandler Morris's highlights from this game where he's completing this pass, where he's running to his left and on his back foot and throws a dart between four defenders on a slant route. You're like, he's the best quarterback in the league. And then you watch his three interceptions and you're like, how is he a quarterback? Like, it's why him and Kendall Briles were so close. The duality of them.
Well, JD, that was a good 90 seconds. I'm glad you didn't rip me a new one about my check I wrote for Colorado State last week.
Oh, don't worry. It's compounding interest, buddy. I'm waiting.
Well, hey, put your hands together because for once, no weekday Big 12 games. All of them will be played on Saturday. So no Thursday, no Friday games this week.
Oh.
And with that said, actually, you know what? I'm going to start off instead of ending this this way. JD, is there any game that's on your radar that might be off some people's radar?
Are you talking Big 12 only?
No, I'm talking non-Big 12. Just a game that's on your radar.
Kent State and Penn State. Have you seen Kent State's last few teams that they've had to play, by the way? And I'm looking it up as I'm talking.
But by the way, can we talk about the 30-0 onside kick that Tennessee pulled?
That was wild. I cannot believe they did that. That is so petty.
Yeah.
By the kicker.
So Kent State started the season with Pitt. They lost to St. Francis, Pennsylvania, who is one of the worst FCS teams in the country. Then lost to number 7 Tennessee, and now they're playing on the road at Penn State. Like,
How are you having fun? Why are you on the team? Like, that's the only game I'm really keeping an interesting mind on is maybe these guys have played such good talent that they might come out and shock Penn State. I mean, Coach Franklin's always known for having one close game that he shouldn't. So maybe this is it. I'm kind of intrigued by it a little bit.
Zion, I like to do this during our, right before we do our selections, or typically I do it after, but I'm doing it before today. Zion, is there a game that, is happening this week that you have your eye on that's non-Big 12?
Yeah, well, they've kind of done it to themselves. So every single week I'm glued to what team they're playing. That's Florida State. I'm curious to see, they're playing Cal this week. They're currently a 2.5 point favorite. Cal is coming in at 3-0 with wins over UC Davis, Auburn, and San Diego State. I've seen some pretty – there's been – I don't know if you guys have seen these, like, AI-generated Cal-Berkeley bear memes that have been going on. So I'm really interested in this game. Does Florida State finally get their first win? Probably not, but, you know, we'll see. I'm going to be tuned into that game.
I'm going to go off both your boards here. They're coming off. So one of these teams is coming off a really bad loss, but to a program that I think is way, way ahead of them. So it's forgivable to me. Keep your eyes down there. And let me see, where is this one? This one, it is in Huntsville. Keep your eyes on New Mexico State and Sam Houston. Bearcats obviously still trying to find their footing here in FBS football. New Mexico State, played a really close game with Liberty a couple weeks ago, got a win against an FCS program that is fairly mediocre, if I'm being honest. But yeah, the New Mexico State Aggies coming to Huntsville against this Bearcat squad that's still trying to find its footing. I think this game could be fairly interesting. At the moment, Sam Houston State's a 12-point favorite. I'm not sure I'm taking that spread, but keep your eyes down at Huntsville. That one is exclusively on ESPN Plus at 6 o'clock on Saturday. So let's dive in here. JD, do you have something you want to add?
Yes, real quick. I am excited for the USC-Michigan game because Michigan is finally going with Alex Borgi, who I've been very high on since last year. Like, it's always a great time when he's in. He gets everyone involved. Anyways, I think that'll be a good game.
That doesn't count, though, because that game's on everyone's radar.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm going to let JD collect himself for
foul
a minute.
Foul joke, JD. Foul joke.
That was bad. That was bad.
I am excited for that game, though.
You know the C in TCU stands for Christian, right? That was, I don't know. That might be dirty. You may have
they
to go.
They should have prayed to God they didn't blow the lead then.
Good point. Let's start. We'll finish with the, well, JD, you won't make your TCU pick because you have another show that you're going to do, which will be filmed tomorrow. I will not be joining for that one, unfortunately. But Zion, you and I will go ahead and make our TCU picks at the end of this. Let's go ahead and start off 11 a.m. on Fox Sports 1 at Nippert Stadium in Cincinnati. It's the Bearcats against the Houston Cougars. Cincinnati opens as a 3.5 point favorite. And I know Houston's horrible, but after that game against Miami, Ohio, that they barely won, I'm wondering if Cincinnati is just as bad.
Yeah, not too high on Cincinnati. I think that game probably should have been a little too close. It was a little too close than I would have expected.
Yeah, I'm going Cincinnati, and Cincinnati covers. Houston's really bad, man. Like, Miami, Ohio is a not bad team. Like, maybe it's because I love the Mac, but like, Miami, Ohio, and that's a rivalry game with Miami, Ohio, and Cincinnati. So, like, There is a little bit extra juice when you're playing. So, but I really think Houston's that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take Cincinnati to cover, but I'm really not feeling great about it. This is what I like to call a pillow fight. Also at 11 a.m., ESPN 2 in West Virginia, the Mountaineers trying to bounce back. They've had a rough go of it in non-conference. And they're taking on another team who's had a rough go of it non-conference, the Kansas Jayhawks. And West Virginia is a 2.5 point favorite. And to me, the home field advantage in this game means everything. I'm going to take the Mountaineers to cover.
Yep, that's exactly how I feel. Both teams are struggling, but that West Virginia home field advantage is just different. So I'm going to go with West Virginia. And if when I didn't make it clear, I also went going with Cincinnati in the other right. one as well.
And when you look at it, West Virginia did not have a very easy non-conference schedule either. So, I mean, looking at them compared to Kansas, they seem like what should be an easy favorite in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they had Penn State in week one, and Kansas, you know, they just lost to UNLV. So the losses are a little different. I'm going to go with West Virginia.
Yeah, there's no Jason Bean to bail out Kansas anymore. So give me West Virginia to cover.
1 o'clock on ESPN Plus, non-conference game here. Iowa State playing host to the Red Wolves of Arkansas State. Iowa State, 22-point favorite. And to me, I feel like this is an easy cover for the Cyclones.
Yeah,
I Iowa State in the points. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm going to go Iowa State.
2:30 on Fox Sports 1. This one I think should be interesting. Arizona State takes on the Red Raiders of Texas Tech in Lubbock. Tech, 3-point favorite. I'm going to take Tech to cover. I'm not feeling that confident about it, though.
I'm taking Tech to win because when I pick them to lose, they don't. So I'm hoping when I pick them to win, they'll lose. But yeah, I'm going with Tech.
I like your logic.
Give me Arizona State, man. I just get these kind of gut feelings. You know, they're going to have to go to stinky Lubbock and, you know, and have to experience that. But give me the Sun Devils. Just a gut feeling, no analysis. Just give me Arizona State.
Just vibes.
Just vibes, yeah.
The game that JD thinks should be the host of College Game Day. Instead, it is a 3 o'clock kick on Fox. The Utah Utes are in Stillwater, Oklahoma to take on the Oklahoma State Cowboys. And this one should – this one is the one I'm looking forward to in the conference the most. And you know what? I'm going to take my initial pick. I know I had Utah 1 and Oklahoma State 2 when we did our preseason rankings. Go ahead and give me the Cowboys to pull this one off at home.
No, brother. It is, again, Utah's going to win by 3 touchdowns because Mike Gundy's going to have his worst coaching performance of his life. And then next week he's going to turn around and beat Kansas State by 5 touchdowns because that's the life of Mike Gundy. Also, Cam Rising's back, so I fully expect Utah to be a Death Star again. Does worry me that the game is at Boone Pickens because Oklahoma State is a scary team. At Boone Pickens, but it's not a night game, so it doesn't scare me that much. So, yeah, I'm still taking Utah, and I'm taking Utah to cover.
Yeah, I think with Cam Rising, if he was out for this game, I think I would lean more towards Oklahoma State. I'm going to take Utah on this one. They're a legitimate football team. So is Oklahoma State, but I'm going to take Utah.
7 o'clock kick on Fox right after the Oklahoma State Utah game. We've got Baylor and Colorado both coming off of teams, smaller Colorado teams anyway, Air Force and Colorado State respectively. It is in Boulder, so the Bears are going on the road and what should be a pretty hostile environment given the fact Colorado just beat their closest rival. Colorado's a 2-point favorite. This to me is fairly interesting. I'm taking Colorado just because I feel like the talent level in Colorado will outweigh the actual team that is being built at Baylor. I give Dave Aranda actually a lot of credit for what's been happening at Baylor these past few weeks. Still, we have a lot to see from it, but it seems like the wheels are finally starting to turn. But I think Colorado just out talents them. Give me Colorado to cover.
Yeah, give me the rapture to happen. Don't want either team to win. If I had to pick a team, I'm going Colorado because you'll never see me picking Baylor. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough game for TCU fans that don't really like Colorado, don't like Baylor either. But I agree with Nolan here. I think Colorado just has more talent. They're playing at home. Give me the Buffs.
On the other hand, Baylor wins this game, hype starts to build, and then they get their hopes and dreams crushed by TCU. I haven't decided which one I want yet, but I think I'm going to go Baylor.
Yeah, but if that happens, you're going to be wrong on a prediction because that means Aranda probably won't be fired by the time they play TCU.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter as much anymore because Gary Patterson's not on the staff to take his spot. Fair enough. That's the only reason I wanted it. I love Aranda as a person.
Fair enough. And the final game, not the one we're going to talk about, but the final game of the week for Big 12 is a 9:30 kickoff. There you go, JD. Here's your Big 12 after dark. 9:30 kickoff in Provo, Utah. The Wildcats of Kansas State are traveling to take on the BYU Cougars. Man, this is a tough environment. Going into Provo after dark, especially because it's going to get cold out there. I mean, people don't realize late September gets cold in northern Utah, especially up there in the mountains. Like, it's already dipping the temperatures that here in Texas, we'd be killing ourselves if it got that low this early. So I am kind of curious to how that's going to go. Kansas State's a 6.5-point favorite. I'm going to take the Wildcats. I don't think they cover.
Yeah, give me BYU in this one. Jake Ratzliff might actually be half decent. I don't want to say good yet, because if you watch the SMU game, there's a lot of things he needed to work on, but he might be half decent. And BYU has a pretty good team, minus the fact that they didn't have a quarterback coming into the season. If Jace Ratzliff could be semi-competent, I like it. I really, really am still not sold on this Kansas State team. Like, they should have lost against Tulane. You played a fraudulent Arizona team. Like, I'm still not completely sold on them, and I think playing in Provo is going to be a little bit too much for Avery Johnson on his first real true road test.
Yeah, I definitely think I need to see a little bit more from Avery Johnson moving forward to feel even more. I feel pretty confident already about Kansas State, but I think I would need to see a little bit more to feel more confident about Kansas State moving forward. I think BYU covers. I think 6.5 is a lot, but I'm going to take Kansas State to just barely get away with the win over BYU. That's going to be a fun game, though. I think that could easily be the best game, you know, maybe besides Utah and Oklahoma State, but that could definitely be a contender for best game in the Big 12 this week.
I'm definitely going to get home from Dallas and be looking forward to laying down in my bed and watching that one. JD is going to abstain because he has an entirely different show to do without me tomorrow, which I think I'm actually really mad I'm missing it, because I think it might be the most entertaining this show has been thus far. But Zion, you and I will go ahead and make our picks for this one. 4 o'clock on the CW, which I hope many people can be there in Dallas for this one, because I know I don't get the CW. Like, I don't know what the heck they're doing in college with college football, but it is the Iron Skillet. It's the TC Horned Frogs and the SMU Mustangs. And I am solely basing this on two things. One, the second half defense that I saw from TCU last week. I know JD called me out for my pessimism. And if that first half Horned Frogs team from this week shows up, TCU's going to wipe the floor with the Mustangs. If that second half team shows up, I'm not betting on it. TCU is a 3-point favorite going in this one. And I'm telling you what, I'm picking the ponies. And here's my other reason why. Kevin Jennings, that guy scares the crap out of me. And because, like, I saw him in high school, when he was playing for South Oak Cliff, and he took the Golden Bears to the state championship for the first time that Dallas ISD had ever seen in 50-plus years. That guy was scary unstoppable. And when he went to SMU, I told everybody that I knew the Mustangs are going to be really good. They're really starting to put some pieces together, especially because a lot of these Dallas-area guys in high school the past few years have been committing to SMU. They want to stay home. They want SMU to build something. They love Dallas like we love Fort Worth, right? And so something scary is going on with all that. And I think Kevin Jennings is the first domino that fell, and we're going to see that on display. I'm taking the Mustangs in this one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really competitive and fired-up game, and not to mention just the context of everything with this rivalry kind of coming to a close. That could certainly be a motivating factor for SMU. And I could totally see SMU winning this game. However, I'm going to take TCU just to, you know, put the good juju out there. So I think what I saw from the first half is hopefully more of an indication of what this offense can really look like. You know, curious to see what adjustments they can make up front on the offensive end, trying to get Cam Cook going a little bit, because they have to find a way to establish the run game at some point. I'm going to take TCU to win this game.
JD, would you like to give us any tease before you do tomorrow's episode?
Yeah. Nolan, I really now wish you were there tomorrow because I have so many things I would have fired back at you. And you're not. And I'm actually, you know what? I'm glad you're not, because I'm having a 2-1. And Micah already gets me fired up as it is. I couldn't imagine. Like, there's you know, a few guarantees in life, right? Like, there's life, justice, pursuit of happiness. And it's SMU being absolutely awful at college football. And I'm banking on it.
I think you messed up that line, by the way. It's death, taxes, yeah, and SMU being
I didn't want to be too
life,
negative.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I didn't want people to take
the
my
Declaration
death,
of Independence
death towards SMU, even though they did get the death penalty. It would have worked out, but...
Oh, man.
Death, taxes, and the Aledo Bearcats playing for a state championship.
Oh, my God.
Well, we have gone well over an hour, which I love. But JD has to get this uploaded, and he has another show to do tomorrow. Zion and I have other things we've got to get to as well. Frog fans, that does it for the 11th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the TC Horned Frogs on SI. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, however you find your podcast. We'll see you next week. Actually, JD will see you tomorrow. I'll see you next week with another great show. And until then, for my partner JD Andres, Zion Trammell, not Trammell, and everyone at killerfrogs.com, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Thanks, guys.